Welcome to Amazon Legends, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became power sellers. Also providers specializing in helping sellers, aggregators that acquire sellers, and former Amazonians will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here is your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. You're going to love my next guest because we've been at this trying to get him on the show, and then we scheduled and then pushed back and scheduled, and I'm so glad he's here today. He's recognized as the leaders of swim diapers, for which his wife was interviewed by Forbes magazine. So there is a funny story about this because they got this interview request by Forbes magazine. And along the same time, Barbara Corcoran was going to be there. So they're thinking that, okay, we're just going to tag along. Barbara Corcoran is the star, and they're going to just include us in the conversation, and, you know, his wife being an entrepreneur. So they just go along, you know, very humble, sitting there. And then it turns out that the reverse was true. In other words, the star was his wife. She was being interviewed, and Barbara Corcoran was there just to support, show her enthusiasm for the success and everything else. So they are, as husband and wife, they made great success with swim diapers, and that's their claim to fame, so to speak. And today, he's the founder and CEO of Influx Catalysts. And they are an external traffic agency with focus on influencer marketing. And when he is not working, which is most of the time, he's into hockey, cycling, and youth athletics. And just before we started, I was trying to brainwash him to get into scuba diving. So with that, everybody, meet my guest, Paul Barron. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Yeah, it's good to finally be here. I think what we had originally scheduled this for, a month and a half, 2 months ago?
Yes, we talked all kinds of things. It was so funny. We were trying to figure out, what we're going to talk about. And that call usually is about half an hour. It ended up being like over an hour and an hour and a half something, because we covered pretty much everything from AI to you name it. So everybody, you want to stay tuned to this episode because Paul understands what it takes to make it in business. So we're going to have high-level conversation, somewhat philosophical, and then we're going to kind of alternate between that high-level and then hands-on. So it's going to, how they all come together. So it's going to be good. So with that, Paul, so tell us, what's the most important thing to recognize for sellers to be successful on Amazon?
I guess the thing that comes to my head is, being successful, it takes a lot, but I guess I'm going to shoot this back at you. Do you think it's like personality, or do you think it's actually the ability to sell, like you're selling chops or selling, your smarts, I guess, personality or ability?
Okay. So, this is really the first question people need to ask themselves. And frankly, this question that you put is the reason why I started the podcast in the first place and called it Amazon Legends, because the kind of personality you have in order to be successful on Amazon has nothing to do with knowledge or experience or anything, right? You have to have a certain kind of personality. So the skills and the experience and everything else, and the methodology, the data and analytics and marketing, it's secondary. So let's cover each one individually. So what kind of a personality should people have?
I think you need to be driven first and foremost. Like, you have to be driven. You have to have a strong reason to do what you're going to do, right? You can't just be like a wantrepreneur. There has to be some sort of defining moment that puts you from wanting to doing, to achieving. I think there's a common thread that I see in a lot of entrepreneurs, And I know that, you know, everybody says the Amazon seller, but really Amazon sellers are entrepreneurs. You know, it's just it's one vehicle, right? And I think that key is you have to be driven. You have to be, I think, not okay with the status quo, that there's something in your life that you're wanting to change, whether that's you just hate your boss, or you whatever it may be. Maybe you're not satisfied with something. I mean, I think of the people that I meet all over the world. Like I was just telling you, I just got back from this insanely long trip, China, then Australia. And I'm very privileged in this world that I live in, because, you know, being invited all over the world to like speak at different events and things, I get to meet a lot of different people and become friends with a lot of different people. And this guy, Andy, if you guys ever get the chance to meet this, his name is Andy Aykroyd. Actually, you should interview him on here. He's not what people would say is like this huge seller, but he doesn't want to be. Like, he wants to sell enough so that he can have fun with friends and build a network and a community. And so I think about him, like, he wants something, and what he wants is different than what I want. But that want, that desire is driving him to sell, to continue to better himself. And Andy's in his 70s. I think he's 72, 73, something like that. And guy has like crazy life. Like, he's fought in a civil war in Zimbabwe. Crazy. Yeah, like just crazy story. But lived in the Middle East for a long time, like South Africa. Now he lives in Australia. Just an amazing person. But I think of people like him, right? Like, his reason is he wants to be able to travel, make enough money to travel, go to events, meet people, and have fun. Versus somebody like Brandon Young, who, like, he's building an empire, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but I think one of the common denominators between those two guys is that they're driven. They have right. some drive, something that pushes them beyond the pain.
Where does money fit into this?
Some people, I think that money is everything. But I think of money is just a tool. Money in and of itself is empty. Like, if you're looking to money make you happy, it won't. I've been in phases of life where I've had a ton of money. And don't get me wrong, like, it's easier to live when you have more money than you don't. But I mean, you know, we met through a good friend of mine, Lauren Petrullo, who you interviewed on your podcast. Yeah. And I've known her for years. And I invited her to speak at an event that I held in Fiji. And, you know, money helps us get to Fiji. But one of the coolest things about Fiji, when we were first there, so we did this entire event I made it very family friendly. There were a bunch of kids there, different families brought their kids. And my kids were there. And their initial thought when we got there was like, why is everybody so poor? What's, you know, Fiji's super poor. And, you know, coming from this mindset of in America, it's very consumeristic, individual, you know, that sort of society, like money makes you happy, things make you happy. And the cool thing that we experienced there was we did a tour of a village. And, you know, these are people that they'll live on less than $1,000 a month. I don't know the exact number, but they're, you know, and it's an agrarian society. And the majority of the people that live in the village are related. It's a very patriarchal, matriarchal society, and it's agrarian. And the cool thing about this was I asked my daughter, she turned 6 later that month. So she's 6 now. Asked her what her thought was. And she said that they live with joy. The Fijians live with joy. And I would much rather have somebody say about me that I live with joy than I have, like, because I think that joy is lasting. Happiness is temporal. It's based on things. Like, money can make you happy, but does it provide joy? And I think that joy is something deeper that runs through who you are as like a satisfaction in life. And so money is a tool. And being an entrepreneur, it allows you great risk and great reward, right? If you work your ass off and you decide that you're going to be successful, you will be successful. I firmly believe that. It's a decision that you're going to make. But ultimately, you need to look at money as to what are you going to do with it. Because at the end of the day, you know, we're all going to die. Every single one of us is going to die. So what is your life about? If you make a bunch of money and then you die, okay, great. What are you doing? How are you impacting the world? What is your money doing? Are people going to remember you, you know, for a year? Are they going to remember you for five? Are they going to remember you for 10 or 100? What are you doing with your money? Because ultimately, it doesn't make you happy. It might make you happy for a little bit. But if you look at it as a tool to change the world for the better, and that's ultimately what I'm about. So yeah. I don't really care about money. I mean, I probably, there's a lot of, you know, we all have negative beliefs that kind of impact the way that we live. And one of my beliefs is the core belief to who I am is that money is bad. It's just the way that I was raised. And so I'm unpacked because money isn't bad, right? Money is not bad. Money is just a thing. Mm-hmm. And so for me, like the reason why I do what I do is to help people and to empower other people. Now, in order to do that, I need money. And if I'm really going to do that, I need a lot of money. So unpacking this negative belief that I have about money being bad, it's money is not bad. It's money is just a thing. You know, it's like saying that air is bad or water is bad. You know, water could be bad if it kills people, but water is also very good, right? So I think that in general, the advice that I give to people that are entrepreneurs and they want something, you know, look at it with a sober mindset of understanding that if you're not happy with who you are and you're looking at money to change that, you're going to be dissatisfied.
Yeah.
Because yeah. You'll make a bunch. And I have a lot of friends that make a shitload of money, way more than I do. And they're not satisfied with their life. And so they're trying to make more money. They're trying to fill this hole. But ultimately, that hole can't be filled by money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what I say is, you know, I speak to many people. We're coming up to 200 episodes at this point. And every one of these people that I invite to the show, they're entrepreneurs. And then part of the, right at the end, we talk about, as entrepreneurs, their life experiences and then how they got into what they do today and what were early signs. And it all comes down to, at the end of the day, what drives them to do what they do today. And not a single guest stated money as their driver. Money is not a driver. So if you want to become an entrepreneur, or you're here, if you're young and you're trying to figure out, or you've got a job and blah, blah, and you just say you're thinking about becoming an entrepreneur, you don't become an entrepreneur. You are an entrepreneur or not. You just simply have it on hold for now. And right. If you want to become an entrepreneur because you want to make a lot of money, don't, because that is not going to keep you going. It's just, it helps. You will make a lot of it. You will lose a lot of it and you'll make it again. It's the roller coaster ride, right? Up and down and up and down. And if you are a true entrepreneur, life is never steady. It's not like, oh, you know, I've done this and I've become successful. Now let's move on to the next thing and then success again and again. Never works that way. You're going to fail over and over and over. And the more you fail, the better you get. And ultimately, what I say is, and that's why I call the show Amazon Legends, is in order to make it through this kind of a journey, especially on Amazon, where you are being tested all the time because they throw stuff at you when you least expect them. It could be easy, a listing suspension or an account suspension altogether. This is not for a regular human being. This is something that's going to test you. And anybody who makes it through that is living a legendary life in my book. So that's why I called it Amazon Legend. So money is not the driver. It helps. I say it's a metric. It's how you measure success, depending on how you define it. But at the end of the day, it's one of the metrics. It's a byproduct. And by looking at that, you say, okay, I'm commercializing the idea and my passion or whatever the case may be. So, okay, So let's now move on to making money. After putting it all the way down, pushing it down, that we had to make it. What does it take to be, as a seller, to be successful on Amazon with your operation?
I mean, I think this comes back to, like, we'd sort of circle this is like why you're doing what you're doing. Because those driving that, so that, you know, you're driven. So the, if you're driven, there is a why. So that would beg the question of why are you doing what you're doing and how do you be successful? And I think that the, some of the keys are, you know, you have to have that drive, that no quit attitude. But you also, you have to be teachable. You have to be perpetually learning. You have to be, willing to, like you said, ride the roller coaster, you know, because the entrepreneurism is a roller coaster. I mean, if you quit when the going gets tough, you're never going to get started because it's tough the entire time. You know, I think of my entrepreneurial journey specific to Amazon, because my entrepreneurial journey started when I was like five, right? But specific to Amazon, it has been hard. There have been easier times, and there have been a lot of times that I could have either failed to start because of fear of failure. You know, I think there's inflection points when you're first getting started. Your one is just deciding to get going and learn. I think the second is when you're placing your first inventory order, like, and you've never done something like this before, you know, that's a huge inflection point of really putting your money where your mouth is. You know, putting your listings, making your listing live. And I remember back, our listings went live in July of 2015. It was incidentally the very first Prime Day ever, day one that we went live. It wasn't planned. Like, I don't even know that we knew. I think we had heard about Prime Day, but, you know, this is the first one. So nobody knew what it was going to become. And we had 9 sales that day. And I was working as a waiter. I had 2 jobs. I was running a marketing agency. I say that in air quotes because it was just me and my best friend. He was doing website development and I was supposed to be doing sales and project management. I'm the worst project manager ever. But I was supposed to be selling things and I ended up doing a lot of the web development too. So I'm trying to do this, you know, during the day, and then at nights I'm waiting tables to pay the bills. And our listing goes live. And mind you, like, we had bought a course that helped teach us how to get started. So in order to be successful, you need to align yourself with people that are more successful than you and learn from them. And I think one key point of another inflection point of failure that I see is when people get a little bit too big for their britches and you think that you've got it and you don't need to learn anymore. And you're like, no, I don't need what you have. And every single time that I've ever done that, I've lost money. Every single time that I've tried to perfect something before taking it and then perfecting as I go, I've lost money. You have to always be moving forward. You have to always be learning. You have to always be going through barriers. You have to have this no quit attitude. And all of that is driven by your why. You have to have a strong drive, a strong reason for what you're doing. And when you get off focus is when you start to lose your way. So, you know, I kind of alluded to this earlier, but one of my whys is my family. You know, I have several whys, but my family is a huge why for me. So if I am, you know, traveling, you know, 2 weeks out of every month, am I actually serving my why? Because I'm away from my family. So I have to recenter, right? If I am spending too much time working so that I can help my family, putting the cart before the horse, am I actually serving my why? You know, it's easy in the Amazon world to look at other people's numbers and hear about this great success, but you don't see what's going on behind closed doors. You don't see, you know, you may hear, oh, so-and-so is selling, you know, $40 million a year, but you don't know what their actual profit margin is. You don't know how much they're sleeping. You don't know how happy they are with life. You don't know a lot of stuff. And so if we get caught in this comparison trap where we're like, well, I'm not successful because I'm not there. I think your why needs to define success for you. And success isn't this end goal. It's a continual journey that's going to be changing, right? Are you moving towards your goal, whatever that may be? So that's, I think, not just in Amazon, what it takes to be successful. It's just what it takes to be successful in life.
There is a bit of a dilemma in this. So your whys are your fundamentals, that those are your guiding principles of why you do what you do and how you do it. So that's what it is. But when you start a business, it's a living organism and it takes a life form of its own with its needs and wants and regulations and you name it, right? So there is no more, if you like, choice as the owner, as the visionary who started this whole thing. And now you have a couple of employees who now make a living out of you. And so this organism here wants you to pay attention and carry out certain duties and fulfill certain responsibilities, which will then conflict with your whys. How do you manage that kind of a situation?
I think living life is living intention in general. You have the tension of freedom. So let's just talk about, we're going to get all philosophical here. Freedom is its own worst enemy, because in order to be truly free, you have to live within restrictions, right? You can't have, let's say you have the freedom to do whatever you want to do. Let's say as an entrepreneur, right? You could start the day by drinking if you wanted to. You could drink whenever you want to, but should you? Just because you can doesn't mean you should. So freedom, you have the freedom to do whatever you want to do, but in order to do what you need to do, you have to live in tension of that restriction. Now, that tension between like this organism, as you defined it, like this, your brand or your business that takes needs, you just have to make sure that you're living in, that your balance is correct, that you're not living out of balance. And I think that, you know, there's times in life where you live out of balance, and that's just normal. Yeah. But I think that you just need to make sure that you're not going too far overboard. Like, I look at somebody, I've never met the man, but Gary Vee, right? He's a huge role model for a lot of people, right?
Not with his swearing.
Not with his swearing, but some people he is. And there's a lot of people that model their lives after him. And the thing that I see as a casual observer, I'm not a Gary Vee fanboy by any stretch of the imagination. I think that he's a smart dude. And I think that he's done some amazing things. But when he started what he was doing, he said he was doing it for his family. And the man recently got divorced and lost his family. So that makes me really sad. Well, honestly, that makes me really, really sad for him.
Well, you know, Paul, this is something also, it often is the case. So people always say family. So remember the show Breaking Bad?
Yep.
So yeah. I'm sure everybody listening to this has seen it, if not majority. So in that show, as you know, he has a son, disabled, and his wife then gets pregnant and blah, blah. And then he has cancer, is diagnosed with cancer, and he gets into this manufacturing crystal meth. And then quickly becomes a terrible person, from being a teacher and a loving and caring person. Now he's calling the shots for people to die and everything else. And all along, he says, I'm doing it for my family. I'm doing it for my family. I have cancer, my treatment, you know, our son and blah, because his wife, ultimately, when she finds, he keeps it secret. And then when she finds out, this thing comes up, always, I'm doing it for my family. And right at the end, at the very last episode, they confront each other. And she says, you know, all this time you've been saying you've been doing it for us. You've been doing it for yourself. It's your ego. It's your satisfaction. It's you want this. And in fact, at the very beginning of the show, when they start selling, crystal meth with his partner, young, drug addict dude, he says he's not satisfied with the small amount of sales. And the kid says, I mean, what do you want? Look at the money we're making. Why do you want more? He says, you don't understand. I'm not in the selling business. I'm in the empire mm-hmm. business. So he was building an empire. So all along, that's what he wanted. But his presentation was, I'm doing it for my family. So this often comes up. And I guess the first thing people have to recognize is they're never making these sacrifices for their family. It's because that's what they want. Isn't that the case?
Hmm. It's interesting. That's so interesting. I'm thinking of this. This just makes me think of, like, again, more philosophical, like the difference between how Sigmund Freud defined love and like C.S. Lewis would define love, who are contemporaries. And Sigmund Freud was very strongly adamant that there is no selfless love. And C.S. Lewis was adamant that there is a form of selfless love. And I think that that's it, again, why you do what you do centers around what you love. And can you love selflessly? I believe that people can. Sigmund Freud believes that people can't. I don't agree, because I see a lot of selfless love. And in that instance, well, you love your family. Are you loving them selflessly, or are you loving them for selfish reasons? Ultimately, okay, so you're doing it for your family. Let's say you're doing this, you're building an empire, but does your family want an empire? Right? But I think that those are good things to ask your kids. Like, I need to ask my kids, like, I'm doing this for you. Now, within a caveat, right? Like, they're 9 and 6, yeah, right? If I asked them and I made my life decisions based on what a 9 and 6-year-old said, I would never work, and I would only play, like, I would only tackle them, like, wrestle games and, paint and, whatever, right? Again, it comes back to, like, that tension and balance in life. Some people to say that life is always lived out of balance, and I think of it more of in seasons. I don't think about balance out of balance. I think that you just need to look and be honest with yourself about your motives. And I think that it is very frequent that we lie to ourselves and we convince ourselves one thing, right? So let's say, well, I'm doing this for my family. And maybe you started off that way. Maybe I started off this way, but then it became too much.
Right.
And it's okay to scale back and say, I've gone astray. I need to come back. And yeah. I think that the people that I look up to the most in life are the ones that do that, that are introspective and are honest with themselves. Again, I would rather be known as somebody who lived with joy and impacted the world than somebody who, for example, like Jeff Bezos, right? Mm-hmm. Richest man in the world, back and forth. But by all reports and what I see in how he runs his empire, he just seems like an asshole. Like, he doesn't seem like a nice guy. He doesn't seem like he has many close friends. At the end of the day, you may be the richest man in the world, but you're still a man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, Paul, I don't know his name. Senior guy, very wealthy, billionaire kind of thing, investor. And then, I don't remember his name. But he talks about the people, successful people like Bezos. He says, oh, you so admire Steve Jobs. He says, I knew Steve. He was an asshole. And then he says, you talk about Bill Gates, changed the whole computer industry. He says, oh, you want to be like him? Bill is an asshole. I know him. So, and then he goes, you see the pattern here? All these successful people. But what he was getting at was, do not look at these people who become huge success and think that, oh, they are lovable, they are easy, that, no, they are very difficult to work with, because the kind of standards they have and how they live their lives. And as you put it right at the beginning, what drives them? It's not for everyone. So, and in the process, you know, it's quite possible that people aren't going to like you.
Yeah. I mean, again, that comes back to, I guess, who you are as a person. Like, I am the type of person that I really want to be liked, which is a weakness of mine, to be honest. But that being said, I do think, and also it's a core driving motive of what I do is to help people. I think there's a lot of bullshit out there that people say that, and then you look at what they do and it's not the same, right? Like the Slick Rick used car salesman types that are like, buy my course. Like, I'm not putting down all courses there. I have friends that have courses. I've run courses, and I'm not saying that all people that sell courses are bad, but you need to look at the tree, right? If you're selling yourself as like an apple tree, and you know, you grow pine cones, you know, you got to know who you're following. And again, coming back to like what you want in life, right? So this concept of being successful, I really believe that you need to have people that are willing to invest in you. Mm-hmm. And those people that you learn from, that mentor you, you will start to become like them. You know, we're the average of the people that we hang out with. So if you want to up-level your life, hang out with people that are where you want to be. Mm-hmm. And what does that look like? The people where I want to be, yes, they are financially successful, but more importantly, they have families. They have a strong family life. Their wives, they have a great relationship, great marital relationship. They have a great family relationship with their kids. Their kids are smart and responsible and respectful and good humans. So that's where I want to be, you know? And again, like unpacking, we all these, whatever these false beliefs are that we all have, whatever those may be, identifying those in going through therapy. I'm a huge proponent of therapy. I'm in therapy again now, and my therapist is, it's funny because I guess in the past I've always had more like the therapist sort of guide the sessions, but he's always asking like, what do you want out of therapy? And again, it's like, why am I here? Well, am I here because I feel like I just need to be here because it's the right thing to do? Am I spending 100 and whatever per session just to talk to you? But I lost my train of thought here. Point is that you need to be introspective. You need to look at where you want to be, and you need to make sure that you are honest with yourself and recognize when you need help.
That's the most important thing. You need to be honest with yourself, because nobody else, you can lie to everybody, but as long as you are honest with yourself, you know, at least you'll have a better life, because you know where you're going. You know, Paul, there is a book called Happiness Advantage. Have you heard about it?
I haven't heard of that.
Oh, I would recommend this. Read it. It's a small book, but let me tell you the story of the book. The writer is a Princeton graduate. So he was born and raised in Waco, Texas. And he gets into Princeton. Like the whole town is like, he's the pride of whole town. A small little place like Waco, Texas. And the guy gets into Princeton. He's over the moon. He's so happy. His major is psychology. So his first day in Princeton, he gets a scholarship, because they're the poor, they're not wealthy. He gets a scholarship, and his first day in Princeton, he's meeting all these kids. And as you can imagine, kids from wealthy families, they are now Princeton students. They don't have a worry in the world, categorically speaking, shouldn't. He realizes everybody's depressed. And it becomes a curious situation. How is it that people who have everything and they are in Princeton and they're depressed? So he graduates and stays on campus. So he's a very funny guy by the name of Sean Aker, S-H-A-W-N, Sean Aker, A-C-H-O-R, Sean Aker. So he says that he's the longest ever person who lived on campus 14 years, because after graduating, he does his, doctor's degree and everything. But what he studied is happiness. What causes happiness? Now, there is this new study, 75-year-old study that lasted 75 years from Harvard, I think they did the study. But he also spent, he interviewed like 2,000 kids and followed them. And what he did was, this guy is also an entrepreneurial guy. So what he realized was, we link our happiness to our goals. And when we achieve our goals, we feel we're going to be successful, and therefore we'll be happy. So therefore, we keep pursuing those goals to be successful so that we could be happy. However, the human psychology is, once you achieve a goal, by that time, you've already set another goal. And this goal you've just achieved is no longer that important. And now you are linked to your next goal. So therefore, you never see yourself successful. I've achieved a success. Yes. No. So therefore, you're never happy. So you go through your life to be happy in a miserable, depressed way. So, and as a result, because of that, the kind of energy you have, the negativity and everything else, your success is jeopardized. So he wrote this book called Happiness Advantage to give people some actionable tips on keeping themselves in a happy mood, because success does not bring happiness, but happiness brings success. And the way he opens the book is, if you go way back to the times when people thought the world was flat and the world was in the center of the universe and the whole universe revolved around the earth, until Copernicus came along, when he discovered the telescope, he actually proved the opposite. He said, no. We revolve around the sun. He says, success is like that. The happiness is the sun in the center, that you have to be in that mode. And then success and everything else will come to you. And the happier you are, the successful you get. And depending on how you define. So that's his premise. That's how he opens the book. And he provides some actionable things. And in fact, I turned them into metrics, believe it or not. And then I will track every day how I was doing. And that would keep you in this happy mode. Mm. And ultimately, that's the trick. I mean, we're talking philosophical, but anybody read that book, you're going to have literally 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think he has like 9 different things that you do like as a ritual. Because what he says is, our brain, we condition our brain to stay unhappy because of the conditioning that the brain goes through over years. So you just have to reverse that process and then put yourself in that happy mode. So that's his take.
Really interesting. It's funny because we were, I love talking philosophy, honestly, because I'm a huge proponent on like knowing what, like understanding what you believe and why you believe it. And I think it's, I heard this quote the other day that a bigot is not someone who, I'm gonna butcher this, but a bigot isn't someone who is just, you think of like a bigot, somebody who's just a hateful, angry person. A bigot isn't somebody who like believes something you don't, that's opposing. A bigot is someone who, you become a bigot when you cannot fathom how somebody got to where they believe. And I think that understanding, like, we are all humans. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, we all do things that we believe are rational to ourselves. That being said, humans are incredibly irrational. We make amazingly irrational decisions, mm-hmm, all the time. And then we back them up with logic, but we're incredibly emotionally driven, which I guess we're going to segue into creator marketing, influencer marketing. the way that I look at creators, influencer, influence in general, it's like the psychology of irrationality and herd mentality. And again, like why you do what you do, why we do what we do, and kind of tapping into those things. Like it's always fascinated me, like why I do what I do. There was a time when I was, let's see, my early 20s, I was sick for like 2 weeks straight. And I just like read like everything on like Nazi literature that I could get my hand. Cause it would just fascinated me how a country could be so taken over by one person, you know, Hitler, who had the hallmarks. Like he was a great leader. He led the nation really well astray. So how could rational people who believe themselves to be rational, like, you know, Germans, like Germans are very not emotional, generally speaking, but this fervor that this man ignited in this nation, an emotional fervor and irrational. It always blows my mind how people can go from believing this to therefore this. Like it's a, you know, I see it again. Like you say that you're doing something for your family, but then you lose your family. Was it really for your family? I'm sure it started off that way, you know? And I think that, a book that I'm going to reread, I need to reread it again, but the book on habits by James Clear. My brain just went blank. Atomic Habits.
Oh, okay.
It talks about like this concept of, I think that he makes this great point that life is made up of small decisions, and it's these small decisions that make the life. And we humans overemphasize this idea of the momentous decision, like this one decision that's going to change things. But you know, the beautiful thing about humans is that, you know, generally speaking, we all have the same thing when we're born. You know, you all have a mother, you all have a father. Now, whether that mother loves you, whether the father loves you, and how much you have from there, is there's a lot that goes into how much you can achieve. But theoretically, anybody could achieve like the heights of greatness, right? You have the same person that could be Mother Teresa. That same person could make choices to make her Hitler, right? So where do these decision points, how do you go from here to there? And I believe that inside every person, you know, there's what this Spider-Man saying that, you know, with great power comes great responsibility.
Right, right.
And we underemphasize the fact that we all have great power, every single one of us.
Right.
And yeah. Every decision that we make is either building the future that we want or destroying the future that we want.
As you know, Amazon often loses inventory or overcharges fees. With Arty, you can now recover up to 30% of your lost revenue at a monthly flat rate of only $99 with no commission fees for unlimited reimbursements. You can increase your bottom line. Their automated Amazon compliant process ensures hassle-free refunds. Visit www.getarty.com/legends and sign up today to get 1 month free and discover your recovery potential. What you just said just a minute ago about that could be the kid, could be Mother Teresa, could be Hitler. So somebody said this a long time ago. This reminded me. When you are a parent, think very carefully about who you're sleeping with, referring to the kids, your kids, because Hitler was somebody's kid one day. It's a scary thought, right? And it's because every human being has that part. No matter, I was not born in America and I immigrated twice. It's not once, it's already a big deal to immigrate once. But I've done it twice. And totally different cultures. In other words, the first time was already a big change. The second time was also a big change. The first time I was born and raised in Turkey and went to London. So hot, you know, tempered, passionate Mediterranean culture versus British, reserved, cold. And then from Britain to America, couldn't be more different. So I've done it twice. So how does one do that with nothing, pretty much? And it's because you have that power, you know, that you have it. And how you use it is the real question.
This psychology of influence, like, really trips up a lot of people when it comes to, like, creator marketing, right? I want to redefine the industry to change what people say from influencer marketing to creator marketing, because every person has influence, right? Mm-hmm. Every single person. And ultimately, the number one way that people will make purchasing decisions is through word of mouth, period. That is how the vast majority of purchasing decisions are made to this day. So I read a book called Contagious by Jonah Berger, which talks about the psychology of influence. And he brings up social media influencers. And even, I think it was something like 7 to 15. It was really low. I'd have to look at the actual numbers. It was around 7 to 9, maybe 15, at the most 15% of all word of mouth decisions. Let's say that on average, word of mouth is responsible for 50% of sales. Let's just say that. Now, maybe 10% of word of mouth is social media. Mm-hmm. And quite frequently, conversations that I have with Amazon sellers specifically are like, well, how do I see the ROI in influencer marketing? And I'm not saying that that's a bad question, but it is a bad question, because what you need to look at is, like, we're so, you know, in the early days of Amazon specific, especially, man, you could put half-eaten spaghetti on Amazon and sell it, right? It's gotten a lot harder these days. And there's reasons why companies like LinkedIn, they just did a white paper that talked about how they're investing massively in brand. Same thing with Gary Vee. Gary Vee, you know, he's come up a couple times in this conversation. He is a huge proponent of performance-based marketing. But all of these big, big people agencies are focusing on brand, because brand is the deciding point. Like, if you're going to say between, let's say this is a Nalgene bottle that I've been drinking out of. So for those of us that are able to watch video, you can see this is a green Nalgene bottle. Now, Nalgene they've been around for ever, and they were like the water bottle for the longest time. Now, if I had a Nalgene water bottle and something that looked exactly like a Nalgene, and one just said Nalgene and they were the exact same price, I would pick the Nalgene because of the brand and the story and the things that go along with brand. Or you have a little bit of the why. Like, you had made a very good point earlier that, like, when you're starting a business, it's like a living, breathing entity, and that's what brands are, right? And when you work with creators who are worth their salt, that are worth working with, right? These are people that are brands themselves, and you want to align your brand with like-minded brands to grow. And it's a huge disservice that I see people thinking of influencer marketing as just like cogs in a wheel. And there are incredibly brilliant business people that I respect that have started very lucrative companies that, for lack of better words, are like UGC puppy mills. So UGC, for those that are listening, if you're not familiar with that, that stands for user-generated content, because user-generated content works. User-generated content is when, let's say I'm hiking, I'm drinking out of my Nalgene, and you could snap a photo of me drinking, you know, you're living this lifestyle of I'm doing what I love and I'm using your product. The most effective UGC is lifestyle, and it's not sales driven, because people don't go to social media to buy things, right? Now, TikTok shops is changing that to a degree. It's like the modern day QVC for Gen Z. And it's really intriguing to see where that's going to go. I'm excited about it. That being said, generally speaking, we hang out on social media. It's like an aspirational medium that serves us dopamine that triggers these wanting, this desires like, oh, I want that. I want to be there. You put yourself in the shoes of the person who's taking the photos, right? It's, again, the psychology of it, of influence is amazing. So brand wins, and brands understand that that the things that win are lifestyle and portraying the lifestyle. And so it's challenging when working with Amazon sellers that are in a, you know, the business model, and there's something to be said for this business model where you sell through. You just white label something, sell through, take the money, and then sell through. That is actually a really good business model, because you don't have to worry about keeping inventory on stock. You don't have to worry about maintaining your rank. You just, you know, play the game, rank well, sell out, make money, and turn it over. But if you're looking at building, you know, something longer term that has value that you can exit, say a brand, then you have to think about those things like lifestyle. You have to think about the stories that people tell about your brand. You have to think about word of mouth, and you have to understand that word of mouth is the number one driver of sales, period. And tracking word of mouth is incredibly difficult. Even when you ask people, how did you hear about us? They're going to remember maybe the last touch point, but they're not going to remember the preceding 10.
You know, Paul, there is something interesting. I had a guest recently, and it's very funny. I forget his name. His episode hasn't aired yet, but he's a Cornell graduate. Okay, so I called him the money man. As soon as we started, I called him the money man. So he graduated from Cornell. Then he worked for a hedge fund. And then he went to work for McKinsey Consulting. So it's all big money. It's all big money. So I said, and now he has his own agency.
So he took the Ivy League path.
That's it. And so anyway, so I called him, you know, when we met first, we discussed. I said, okay, that's it. And then when we started recording, he's the money man. He understands big money, the large scale and everything else. But he had data to prove something that, frankly, after talking to you, I would say that is the new form of word of mouth. What he proved is organic traffic does not come from search.
It's interesting. So it doesn't come from search.
You want to hear the evidence?
Yeah. So I would want to say, I want to hear, but I want to hear what, because there's a but coming. But there is no but.
Organic search does not come from search, period.
Okay. Where does it come from?
Anything but search. Give you examples. Frequently bought together. People who looked at this also looked at this. External. Anything but search. Now, this is how he proves this theory. I have not yet done this exercise because I just recorded a week or so ago. Now this is available because Amazon releases the data. Search query performance.
Mm-hmm.
Download the entire search query performance file. Those are keywords that have been used in search, right?
Right.
Paid or organic?
Right.
Add up all the clicks. Then download your paid search report for the same period. Download the report, add up all the clicks. He says, you'll find they are almost the same. Then download your business reports. Same period. Look at the total of the sessions, almost double. If you are a mature kid, usually if you're doing this well, you rank up and everything else, you get 50% organic, 50% paid. So he says, so I ask a question. If your entire search performance is half the number of sessions shown in your business report, where is the organic coming from? The answer is anything but search. And that is...
So does he mean anything but search specifically on Amazon?
Oh, we're talking Amazon.
Okay, because that's where I was confused, because I'm just thinking like organic, the way that I think of organic, I don't even consider search on Amazon to be organic anymore. I mean, there's everything is paid. There is organic ranking on Amazon, but really that like the numbers are proving now that if you are not advertising and you're not converting on ads, your organic rank will decrease, like period. But the way that I think of organic is like everything off of Amazon.
So, but let me tell you this. Okay. So this is, I have not yet told you the real message. So if your search traffic to your listing is half of the total traffic, and that other half, the organic traffic, is not coming from search, it's coming from all kinds of different things. What is influencing that? What is influencing your exposure to bring that to you?
I think it's like my guess would be what people know of your brand and what other people are saying about it.
No. Being a hedge fund guy, this is what he said. You brought up Jeff Bezos. He says, okay. Listen, he said, Jeff Bezos was a hedge fund guy. So he applied the same principle. So what they do is the Amazon system simply does this following. You pay, you get your exposure, and in the process, you drive your BSR. And based on your BSR performance, the platform then decides to bring you organic. So it's the BSR that's driving the amount of organic traffic you get, which is anything but search.
I could see that when it is only in the Amazon ecosystem. However, I know that Amazon rewards external traffic tremendously.
Oh, yeah. So, but this is included. What he is basically telling everyone is this. This dream about paying for your Amazon ads, your sponsored product, sponsored brand, right, whatever, to rank up on specific keywords so that you can start to get organic traffic from those same keywords that you converted through paid ads, there is no such thing. That's what he says.
This is where I've been preaching since 2018. I have been preaching the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over. You have to own your customers.
Right.
That's the essence of what I've been saying since 2018. And it's really shouldn't be rocket science. Say you're launching a product, right? This is why I'm so in love with brand. Because if you're launching a product and you build an audience of people that love your product, so again, I'll just bring up my Nalgene bottle, right? So what other things go with Nalgene's? Like maybe lids. It's probably bad idea, but the lifestyle of Nalgene in general, maybe the top avatars that I can think of people to purchase would be like, there's the office worker avatar, there's the school kid avatar, there is the sports enthusiast avatar that can be broken into sub avatar groups, right? So there's like the athlete that works out in the maybe the gym, and then there's a person that goes hiking. Right. So let's say that I'm building out lifestyle imagery around this. If I'm wanting people to know that I am the name, I'm not going to start advertising to them and saying, buy my water bottle, it's great for the office. No, I'm going to go to my audience and I'm going to ask them to start taking photos of themselves using it in their day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to start building a community around of people that are passionate about telling my story and empowering them, whatever that may be, right? So let's just pick, I think the core thing with the core tying thing between all these audiences would be healthy living, probably, because people know that it's healthy to drink water.
Yeah.
Right. That's why there's like all these giant, I don't know if you've seen this trend, but there is like a trend of like these, like drink a gallon a day. And there's like these gigantic water bottles that are just huge. Right. I have one. I have one. One of my team members convinced me to buy one. And she got everybody on the entire company to buy one of these stupid water bottles.
Well, yeah, is everybody using it? That's the main question.
I mean, it's in the cupboard. But I mean, you know, that coming back to like using it is all about community. You are who you hang around. So if you can reverse engineer how you can keep community talking about what it is that you do, then you're going to stay at the forefront of people's thoughts. And coming back to the psychology of influence and where people overestimate things is we place too much value on the Jeff Bezos and the Gary Vaynerchuks of the world, right? These big shining stars that are like beacons, right? Yeah. Kim Kardashian, all these folks. But we underemphasize the normal person, the person that is your avatar. Now, one of my friends told me this the other day. Because I feel like one of my superpowers is just being a friend, honestly. Like, when I love going to events and I love making friends, and not just do I love making friends, I love helping people. And one of the best ways that I can help people is by connecting somebody to somebody else, right? Like, I love helping businesses. And when I get super excited when people tell me business ideas, because like that's when my brain juices start flowing and I'm like, have you tried this? Have you tried this? Have you met this person? Have you tried this software? Have you done this? You know, I'm going to give you all the advice you never asked for. But
you are the ultimate word of mouth person.
Oh, I love it. I love it. You know, because like, and this is where I'm an advisor for Carbon 6. And all that means is that I tell them my opinion on things. And they asked me to be an advisor. And what I get out of that is I get some free software and I get to tell them what I like about it and what I don't like about it. And then I get to tell that to the community, right? I've been telling them this for months. Like, I think in general, most affiliate programs are broken. I think that they're garbage, generally speaking, because let's say like when it gets suspect when you say, well, click my link, right? Well, it goes from a strong recommendation to a, why are you recommending this? Right. So think of this. Let's say you're out to dinner with friends. I mean, this happens all the time. Like, we're over at a friend's house enjoying, you know, having beers on the Friday night or something. Right. And they tell us this, oh my gosh, there is this new restaurant that just opened up. It is amazing. You've got to go check it out. If they were to say, oh my gosh, there's this new restaurant that just opened up, and make sure that you tell them that we sent you, then it would say, oh, okay, why? Or if it's like, well, they're going to get you in the door quicker. That's a different reason than, well, because I get 20% discount. I get a 20% referral fee, right? This is the issue with influencer marketing in general and tracking performance. When it goes from a standard, I'm loving hiking and Nalgene helps me hike longer, like, right? Like, helps me stay hydrated, whatever, right? And I'm just taking photos of it versus, you know, buy this now. It falls flat because then it goes, people are like, well, why are you promoting this? Now, if it's a name brand and the brand has brand equity that people can trust, they're not going to think it's suspect. But when you have, you know, I'm sorry, you know, Susie, the Amazon seller, but nobody's ever heard of your brand. And when you're trying to build your brand and you're being so dogmatic about making sure that you have the tracking links and all that stuff, which again, I'm not saying that's bad, but when it causes people to question the integrity and the motivation of the person who's promoting it, because they've never heard of you, right? They've never heard of you. They're going to think, well, this person's only promoting it for the money, so I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah, I mean, it's ultimately what we talked about earlier. You know, money is never the driver. It has to be authentic. And, yeah, you know, yeah, what you said just a minute ago about, you know, these shining stars, that's not really who's going to influence you as much an average person who's doing it, because that average person is authentic. You can trust. And we watch movies. Everybody loves celebrities. Can you really take them seriously when they are doing something or promoting something? They're getting paid for it. They're professionals. No. They're acting, right? But if you come along and you talk about your life experience and you talk about how a particular product, you know, was always there for you, then they're going to trust you more because yours is an authentic story.
Exactly.
And that's what it comes down to.
I mean, that's it. It has to come down to the fact that you value every single one of your customers. Now, one of the things that Amazon gets really right is, and that Jeff Bezos did a great job early on, was he said, well, their tagline with Amazon was customer obsession.
Right.
And I think that is, we have a lot to learn from that, because if you can look at every single customer and treat that person, you know, when was the last time that you felt so valued and respected by some company that they bought a customer for life? Tomer Rabinovich, if you know him, he talks about 6-star customer experience, and I love that. And it's he and I are right on the same page with this, because you need to think through, how can you make every single one of your customers such a raving lunatic fan that they can't help but telling everyone they know about you?
Do you know the pull the cord method or program or whatever they call it? Are you familiar with that? Pull the cord. No. It's the pull the cord something. But it goes back to Toyota. So the CEO of Toyota, one day he implements this program where he believes that since it's an assembly line production, if any one of the workers, assembly line workers, finds something that may jeopardize the entire production line, he actually had installed these cords running above head. Any assembly line worker could reach out and pull the cord, which would stop the entire production. So Jeff Bezos implemented that procedure. So those people who answer your chat or your phone as an Amazon customer, you know, who purchased something, that you are complaining about something, they apply that pull the cord procedure. And if they feel that what is being reported is spoiling the Amazon customer experience, they pull the cord and they stop the sale of a product or a service or a particular carrier. And I tested this. You know what happened? My package was delivered. It showed delivered. I was in an office space, shared office space, which had strict policy to shut the doors at 5 o'clock. So this package was extremely important. And it was like Friday or something. And I'm waiting for the package, constantly checking if it's delivered or not, because it's a big place that receives all the packages. And I see it delivered. And I go to the place where they receive all the packages, and they say, no, we don't have it. I get on the call, and I'm asking, 45 minutes later, the package showed up at the building. And I'm one of those people who will just dig, you know, until I get to the bottom of things. And I realized that the carrier was tagging them delivered before delivery. And I reported that. When I realized this, I went back and I said, this is what happened. And I just wanted to let you know. I got a call back from somebody senior saying that we just want you to know that we will no longer be using that carrier because we realized that they were doing this for several packages. So they have this pull the cord mentality or procedure that any Amazon employee is empowered by this pull the cord procedure where they can stop any sale or process or provider, seller, or anything if they feel it jeopardizes the Amazon customer experience.
I mean, that's a great lesson for Amazon sellers. I have a friend who the very first person that I ever met at an Amazon event ever. Her name is Susan McDowell. She's such a gem. If you ever meet Susan, chances are she's going to be sitting at a bar with her laptop and a mouse. She always brings her mouse. And I met her at this bar at a hotel in Austin where the event was happening. And I met her and she had told me, has stuck with me for years. Amazon is a stovepipe and that the people are just trying to keep their jobs. So if it's in their best interest to shut you down and not ask questions, they're going to do that. So they're going to pull the cord in your account. If it looks like you're violating terms of service, if it seems right, like they're not going to dig into it, they're just going to shut you down. Yeah. And this makes me think, I guess to summarize like our entire conversation here, like you can get anywhere you want to go in life if you help enough other people get where they want to go. So if we apply that to Amazon, right? We know that Amazon is customer obsessed. We, as much as we gripe that we're their customers, we're not. We are tools to help them serve their customers, aka make money. So if we can apply that to Amazon, help Amazon get where they want to go, then we're going to win. Exactly. You know, where Amazon wants to go is provide the best products at the best value. They want to be the everything store. And they want their customers to rave about them and come back. So that's why I will always say having inserts is you need to have them, but you need to make sure that you're not violating Amazon's terms of service and you're not trying to circumvent things and get people to come, you know, buy on your own website, right? Plain and simply, Amazon customers are going to be Amazon customers. They're going to buy from Amazon. Now, when you're talking about external traffic and building a brand off Amazon, people are going to buy where they're going to buy. So you need to sell everywhere. You need to sell on Amazon. You need to sell on Walmart. You need to sell on Target. You need to sell in store. You need to sell on your website because people are going to buy for their reasons. And if you help them get where they want to go in life, then you're going to win.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. So Paul, we usually do 1 hour, but you know, conversation with you, we can do this like forever. So great business talk. And right at the end, I always want to peel the layers of the onion of my guests.
I feel like all we've been doing is peeling onion layers.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of, we've been doing that. This is not tactical conversation, has not been tactical conversation entirely. We've had that. But I have one question for you, which I think is, I'm curious to know the answer to. So this thing that you know about yourself, you know, you want to be honest with yourself, that you know why you do what you do. That's your drive, right? That's what drives.
Yeah.
When did you discover that? Because clearly that didn't fall on your head at the age of 25 or 30. I'm sure that as a kid.
Yeah. It was when I was 4 years old. I was just like any kid. You have kids?
No.
Okay. So any parent knows that getting kids to take a nap is a giant pain in the ass. Like generally speaking, like they're going to fight you and they're like, I don't need a nap. I'm not sleepy. Like you're clearly exhausted. You need a nap. And I was like that. And I remember one time specifically, my mom sent me to take a nap and I willingly went and I just laid down. And as I was looking out the window, I heard the word in my heart. It wasn't like audible, but I heard the word pastor. And when I was a kid, that made me think, you know, what you would typically think of the word pastor, meaning like you start a church. And so that set the course for my life. And ultimately a pastor is somebody who empowers people. and is kind of a mentor for them, you know? And so that's what I do. I'm a pastor. I'm just not in a church, and it's generally not religious I mean, I'm a person of deep faith. And I think that people, faith is a very personal choice. And I think that's why I'm so intrigued by getting people to think about what they think about. Because if you don't think about what you think about, and you don't think about why you're doing what you're doing, you're going to live a sort of half-baked life.
But at the age of 4, you decided to empower people.
Well, I decided that that was what I was going to be. I didn't know what that meant, you know, and it's evolved over time. You know, when I was a kid, and I went through the phases like a normal boy, like I was going to be a fireman, I was going to be a fireman chaplain, then I was going to be a police officer.
But empowering people was in the core of it, right?
It's always been the core. Yeah.
But why? Where did that come from?
Honestly, like it came from God. Like, it wasn't me. Like, it was literally something that I just felt like I heard.
Did you feel that you needed empowering as a kid?
I don't know. I don't think so. I had a very good childhood. I mean, my dad and my mother are still married. My dad is an amazing man. He has his faults. My mom is an amazing woman. She has no faults. But and he'll be the first person to agree with me on that I'm a lot more similar to my dad. I can be a giant asshole at times, but I think
they like helping people.
Both yeah, they them. Love. That's what they do. They love helping people. I mean, my mom runs a daycare preschool, and she does a lot of scholarships and things just to help people.
Do you think you help people as much as your parents do?
Ooh, I do in a different way. You know, I help people. When I was in my 20s, I decided that the iteration of being a pastor, what that looked like, was helping people start businesses in third world countries so that they could feed themselves. Now, I may not be doing that in third world countries, but I am doing that all over the world, you know, via mediums like this, podcasts, webinars. Like I said, I just got back from an event. Well, it was 2 weeks ago now in Australia. I had the privilege of speaking at Southern Stellar Fest with Jamie Paros and Michael Fennec. And that the Australian community is just amazing. And prior to that, Steven Selikoff invited me as a coach to on his China trip for Canton Fair, and I was able to help people there. And so, like, that's what I'm doing now. I would love to have less money stress.
Well, but you know, Paul, what I'm noticing is you're so busy with, as you put it, your drive to help people.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like you're trying to, this is not normal amount of trying. This is just like you are on a mission to help.
That's, you put it right. That's my mission in life. That's why. It's my mission in life. It's who I am. It's the core driving motive of what I do is to, honestly, is to show people that they have value, that they have purpose.
You feel this, you were born with this mission.
Yeah, that's what
it's not with. One particular event that happened in your life.
I mean, it was that the defining moment was when I was 4, that one moment where I just heard that word and I woke up. I took my nap and I woke up and I told my mom when I woke up that I was going to be a pastor when I grew up. And it's been a lot of iterations of trying and failing and thinking that it was this thing, but it's actually something different. And as I'm trying to get there, I feel like I lose the way and then I fall. But then in that fall and in that pain, like, I learn things that help me.
Yeah.
You know, there's had a lot of different issues with depression in my life, and going through phases like that have helped me just to identify really who I am and what I believe. And not just that, but then how I can help people more in those areas of belief. And, you know, identifying, like, prior to starting the whole Amazon journey, I was fired from a job, and there's a bigger story there, but it kind of put me into a period of depression for about 2 years because I was newly married. And I had my identity kind of wrapped up in being the provider, being the, like, being that. And when that was taken away from me, it kind of put me back to who, like, who am I? You know, why am I here in the world, right? And if you, I can really empathize with people that feel very pointless, because there's a difference between failing and identifying at the core of your being that you are a failure, that there's something wrong with you. And that's kind of the message that I want to get out to the world, that you can be, you can go through hard times and you can fail and you can, but you are loved. And if it's, again, like, I, my faith is so core to who I am that at the core, I believe that God loves you. But even if you don't believe that, I love you. And even if I'm the only person, like, I'm getting all emotional. I'm such an emotional person, but
it's, I mean, listen, this is the meaning of life, right? So it's, it's what, you know, people, you know, I work with people and they ask me, and people come to me all the time. I'm not talking like only in this country, you know, because these days you have remote employees, and people come to me, they hear, or they work for a while, they leave and come back, and they say, look, we always learn with you. And I always tell them, that is my purpose in life, to make an impact, to make a lasting impact. So if one day I don't have kids, I don't have family, so after I'm gone, if one person in this world can say, you know, this guy was not easy to work with, but he changed my life. I learned so much, and because of that, I'm here. And I'm proud to say that I've had several people say that already to my face when I'm around still. So it's the purpose. And you obviously found your purpose. And every day you are getting closer and closer. But we are also human beings. Right. We fall apart, right? We fail. Things don't work out. We become depressed. I was on a podcast and somebody asked me, so how do you deal with being depressed? What do you do? So my answer, and this is my recipe. So I said to them, listen, we are human beings and things don't always work. And sometimes shit hits the fan and you are down. So there is no magic pill that you can take to get out of this, that depression. So what I do is decide that, okay, tonight I'm sulking. Life is terrible. I'm gonna dabble in my misery and suffer as much as I can suffer, torture myself, think like I'm a huge failure, this, have that, have, you know, whatever. Just don't touch anything. It's in terms of work, because you're not going to be productive. Go try and watch a movie. Don't watch anything to do with, you know, that may contribute. So just enjoy being depressed. And then when you wake up, start with a clean slate. So when you try to fight that depression at the time that you're feeling depressed, you're not going to win that fight. So surrender. Enjoy the depression and the following day, keep going. I mean, that's, I don't know if, frankly, I cannot even say that I'm successful in doing that. But that's what I try as much as possible. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But as long as you are on your mission and you're getting closer, and then that failure that caused that depression is part of the learning, what are you going to do? You just keep going, right?
Learn.
You know who? Your story reminds me something. I don't know. Do you know Edgar Cayce?
Sounds very familiar.
Okay. Your story is exactly like his story, except that I don't think you are the sleeping prophet. They called him sleeping prophet. So Edgar Cayce, as a kid, a young kid. One day they lived, I don't remember where they lived, but one day he was out in the woods playing, and suddenly he sees a bright light. He was older than 4 years old. He sees a bright light. And this bright light, he can't make out what it is. And this voice says, "What do you want to do with your life?" And Edgar Cayce says, "I want to help people." As a kid, he's a kid, like 7, 8 years old. And the bright light disappears. The next thing is, he comes home and he's got an exam the following day. He's supposed to study American history. And his father is getting him to study. Like, he's teaching him and whatever. Says, "Okay, you read the book, blah, blah." And then finally he says, "Okay, you read these chapters. I'm going to come back and ask you questions. Make sure that you learn." So his father leaves him. He's in front of the fireplace. The fire is going. And he falls asleep on the book, lying over the book. He falls asleep. And after a while, his father comes back. He says, "What happened? You were supposed to study. I was going to ask you questions." And he says, "It's okay. Ask away. I think I can answer." He answers every single question. He hasn't read the book, nothing. He learned it all. It all came to him. And then he grows up, starting to see an aura around people. And he would immediately be able to say, "Oh, Mrs. Smith, what's the matter? You are angry today. Who upset you?" Or, "Oh, you're happy today," because he would see the aura. And to the extent that one day he was in a department store waiting for an elevator, and this elevator arrives, the doors open, and he sees a bunch of people inside the elevator, and he's about to step in, suddenly realizes none of the people had any aura around them. And then he steps back, the elevator doors shut. The next thing is, cable snaps, people die.
It's crazy.
And at that point, he realized he had something. And what he would do was, he would basically go to sleep. And in his sleep, he would see visions. And those visions would become reality. That's why they called him the sleeping prophet. So people would go to him and say, "I've got this problem. How do you think I can cure this?" He would like lie down, go to sleep, and then he would start to see things. And then he would say, "Okay, go. There's a store here, and then go there." And there's like crazy stories. Look him up, Edgar Cayce, Casey. It's amazing stories. But it all started with him saying, as a kid, "I want to help people." And he ends up helping people to the extent that doctors couldn't cure, or, you know, the different situations. And that's what was driving him. Tell people, how can they reach you, and tell us, how can they contact you?
Yeah, so you can go to our website, Influx Catalysts, 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 InfluxCatalyst.com. And, you know, there's a ton of content that I've done. So you can just Google Paul Barron and influencer marketing or chatbots or anything. It all come up. And if you ever, you know, at Prosper, speak at Prosper frequently. I mean, there's a ton of events that I speak at. So, but Influx Catalyst, and you can email me, paul@emailinflux.com.
Great. Thank you, Paul. Great discussion. Thank you for being here.
Likewise.
Before you go, make sure to sign up with Aarti and claim your lost revenue. Visit www.getaarti.com/legends to register. You will get 1 month free and experience Aarti's features. Sign up now at www.getaarti.com/legends.
Right.
Thank you. And this brings us to the end of another episode, and I'll see you on the next one.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the episode, and share it with someone you think would benefit from it too.